Kia ora, koutou, welcome everyone to part three of Mama's Lockdown and Me. I am so excited. I've got this like pre-Christmas rumble in my tummy about the person I'm going to talk to. I am very privileged, a very busy woman, to sit and talk to Madama Davidson, of the co-leader of the Green Party, who is Mama of six. Go figure. Also, a new thing I learned this morning, qualified aerobics instructor, which we will talk about later. Reason why I'm very excited is because of the work I do around family violence and sexual violence, and your history and involvement in that movement and what's been going on in this country. And as you can hear, I'm not from here, but I am completely in love with this place. So the first thing I ask is, how are you? But also then I ask again, how are you?
I love that question. I'm really good, actually. This weird thing where I'm both grateful to be home, because I don't normally get to be home.
Yeah.
And it's also bloody hard to be home. So I'm really good. And, you know, I can't help this bit that I always say because I'm a politician. But I'm really good. And that actually highlights even more how urgently I also feel about making sure that others are good, because the reason why I'm good is because I have a warm, safe, secure home. We have enough income to buy kai and feed our family and pay our power bill. And I'm in a loving environment. I am in a place where I have loving relationships and connections to people. So I am really, really good. And I am concerned about wanting to make sure everyone else is really good, and I know for a fact that they're not.
So that's one of my questions later on down the list, is about who we're all worried about. I just want you to, can you explain who's in your bubble?
Oh, yes. Oh, so there's my husband and I. He's also working from home.
Yeah.
He works with emergency housing, transitional housing. There's my oldest daughter, who's about to be 26, her partner and their baby, our first and only grandchild, that we as a bit of a bribe, I have to say, so baby's, she's coming up to 11 months, and I actually offered to give that family the master bedroom, the big bedroom with the ensuite, and we've moved into what my husband calls the little flatting bedroom, so that they would stay. There's my three youngest, who are 11, 12, and 14. The little baby is 11 months, and there's our dog, Nala, who is also the center of the universe.
And very important.
The most. That both my grandchildren, because the dog also belongs to my daughter and her partner. So I'm the nana of two, in fact. And that's our bubble, and it's a chaos, loud, and very loving bubble, and I'm very grateful.
Yeah. So what have you noticed? Have you noticed things?
Yes. What have I noticed? I've noticed how much hard work it is. So I'm not normally at home. I'm away a lot. And when I am away, I get to be so focused and busy and focused on my work. That's what keeps me going through missing my family and feeling quite disconnected from them.
Yeah.
What I have noticed is how much work it is here to sustain this house, to keep people happy, even just to keep people clean and alive.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's the standard. You know, I was sort of, and so I've noticed how constant it is to keep people fed and happy and alive and well in this household, in this very busy household. I've had to keep working, so the 12 and 14 hour days have had to continue, and what I've noticed is how hard it is to try and be here but not be here. Yeah. That has been quite difficult. Whereas when I'm away, at least I don't have to yearn for my little grandchild who's crawling down the hallway when my kids are playing ball in the yard. Yeah. I could focus on, I don't feel like I'm missing out as much as I do when I'm here and they're just out the doorway and I know they're here, but I've still got to work. So that's those are a couple of things that I've noticed.
And I think I've talked a lot to friends of mine who, you know, I was saying to you before, when they announced level four, I burst into tears because it's, you know, it's like, this is good. This is what we need to do. But the, and my friends are well aware of my struggle with being a mom and the pull push of loving my work and loving being on my own. The dropping off at daycare and the big sigh, you know, I sit in the car and go, okay, this is my time now. And that having to, you know, I work for an organization who is dealing with the crazy struggles of people in the community, and we meet every day and we work it out, and I have to put the TV on, and that guilt of that, I want to be with you and I want to notice what you're doing and I want to help you and I want to do all that stuff, but I can't, and I also don't want to. I don't want to sit and play with you at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I want to go and read my book. I want to go and have a coffee on my own. I want that real back and forth. And I think that overwhelming feeling of emotion we feel about our kids and what we're, you know, most people say, who I've spoken to, said they're going to be all right. They're going to be all right. They're learning about lots of things at the moment. They're, you know, my 2-year-old asks me every day, are you all right? And I'm like, you shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
But you know. And that real back and forth. And also that role, the stuff around roles, which we talk about a lot at work, about, you know, we had it, me and my partner had it at the start. Well, whose work's more important? Who gets to, who has to look after the child now? Who has to take that meeting call? Well, I want to do that. Well, I want to do that. So how do you work out as a family how you do that when you've probably not had to do that before?
Well, you know what? So I mentioned that my husband is also working from home. We both work from home. And we're in a gorgeous, warm, modern home that we rent, but it is only a 4-bedroom home. And so I don't have an office. So I'm sitting on my little small bedroom on our bed, and that proved to be not a very good guarantee for healthy backs and necks and shoulders.
No.
So I've managed to put two stools together as a desk and have the kitchen chair in my little room because that's the only place that I can find to be quiet. But there was this day right at the start. It's taken us probably till this time to set ourselves up to any sort of decent level. Right at the start, my husband and I running around with our computers on our Zoom calls, both ran into the bedroom at the same time, trying to get away from the chaos, looked at each other and went, I've got a call. No, I've got a call. Well, but I've got a call too, but so have I.
Yeah.
And we literally were fighting for quiet space. I think we ended up getting him shoved into the garage, which is also very noisy. But that's the literal struggle that we've been having. It's taken us this long to work out our systems.
Were you on a trampoline at one point?
I was doing a live recorded Skype interview with my computer on the trampoline outside in the garden because that happened to be the quiet place at that time. I've tried a tent. I had a tent up in the backyard. Turns out that when the rain comes on a tent, very noisy.
Yeah.
Happened to be on a 100 person virtual town hall meeting at the time. The bed is not comfortable, as I said, so we're now at a sort of a thing where I'm on a chair with a couple of stools as a desk, and that's for my 3-plus-hour daily select committee meetings that I'm on, which are public-facing. Yeah. So we look, you do what you do. You work out what you work it out, and we're luckier than most. So I just want to say one thing. I happen to have started browsing, what do you call them, like cabin office sites, and fantasizing about plonking something in my garden.
Oh my god.
To have my own space in my own room.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently there's been a whole movement of people who just go and sit in their car and you know, outside the house.
We've done it.
Yeah, and the kids go, "Where's mom gone?" And dad or whoever's at home says, "She's having her time."
I did one meeting from the car, because that actually ended up being at that moment the only quiet space that I could actually find. And it's quite cramped in a car, and it's quite hard to see. All these things, amazing.
I know.
And people around the country are working these things out and are having frustrations and laughs along the way.
I know. And I also think a lot of the women I've talked to, a lot of them have relaxed, you know, that whole like, so I've got this control over, I drop my kids at this time and then I go to the office and I've done my yoga and I've done my and I'm like, that some of that's got to go. And they're like, I know, and I'm really fighting against letting some of that go. And I've had to, and actually noticing that their children have relaxed, that their partners have relaxed, that the home feels slightly more relaxed, that everyone can go, oh, actually mum's not in this juggle. You know, there's still the juggle, but actually some of it's just gone, do you know what? It doesn't matter. I was reporting to MSD in a meeting last week, and I'd said to my husband, you've got to keep the toddler away, man. I've got to do this report. This is like really serious. And halfway through, she ran in and shouted, mum, I've weed on the carpet.
Beautiful.
And the representative just went,
meh. Do you know what? We were on select committee last week, and the minister of that very department, amazing. There she is. There's Carmel at home, beaming into the select committee in front of the nation. And during her submission, one of her children ran into the office, and all of a sudden you see her look up, and then while she's trying to give her submission, you see her look up and she goes, one moment, I just have a child I need to remove. And these are the things these are the things that we're all having to. I was on a virtual town hall on Thursday night with my co-leader James Shaw, and a couple of times through that meeting you see me lift my eyes up above my computer. Bless my family, you know, on that Thursday in particular I had no gaps in my diary and therefore no proper food space, so my family were bringing food in and plumping it down next to me, next to my Zoom calls, and so that I would have some food somewhere along the way, so that you've got me looking at people plonking down food on my bed so I could eat.
This is
the support that also that my family have been providing me.
Amazing. So what do you worry about? So, you know, probably similar to me, I worry about people who are in houses that have to stay in houses who don't normally get some space, about those teenagers who don't want to be in those places where it's crappy, or they want to go and see their friends because that's the time they have, or they're not seeing those teachers that they absolutely adore and it's their only time during the day that they get that break. I sit and worry about those people.
Well, I'll start from my own house. I guess I could have answered this part when you said, what have you noticed? That when my children, when a couple of them in particular started going a little withdrawn and silent, that worried me. And I realised that my husband and I needed to just check in a little more intrusively, I suppose you could say, and just sort of make sure that they know that this is not ordinary, and that it's absolutely fine to feel whatever it is that they're feeling. We know for a fact that they're missing their friends, they're missing those connections, that it gets mundane and weird all day here in the home. Yeah. We make extra effort to take them out to do our state-sanctioned walk, as others are calling it, to be able to get out in the yard and throw a ball around. But the withdrawn stuff was a little uncomfortable, and I worry about that that break in social connection. I've always said from the start that, you know, the stay-home message is absolutely right, stay home, but we needed to acknowledge from the get-go that not everyone has a home.
Yeah.
Secondly, not everyone has a safe home. Yeah. And my husband and I, we talk about this on our walks in particular all the time, that we just take for granted that, well, right now at least, we are in loving, trusting relationships. We are in a loving, trusting relationship with each other and with our children. And imagine if you had anything less. Imagine if you did not have a safe home to stay home at. Imagine if you did not have a home to stay home at. And I'm really pleased that we as a government have actually just pulled finger and gotten people into places, and we've acquired motels and whatever the heck we need to get people into homes. I am thankful that people like Jan Logie and Andrew Little have been working on a specific domestic violence response through this, making sure that people know that even though we are at alert four, that all of the services, like the services you work with, Jane, are still here and have to be here and are available to help give people the support who are living in violent and abusive relationships. And so I'm glad that there is work happening, but those are that's primarily what I'm getting up for every day, is for those people who are not safe.
I also think that the real shift for us in an organisation has been the feeling of humanity about those people, whether they're working stuff out, whether they're in something that's not good. We do programs with people coming through corrections or the court, and the feeling of, if you get just 15 minutes with that person, find out how they're going. Don't worry about programs and sticking to guide. Find out how those people are feeling. And, you know, the real big thing we've been talking about through Tonest particularly is people have got a teacup's worth of energy, and we're trying to pour a massive bucket full of water in it. And constantly reminding yourself that people, your friends, your whānau, your, you know, the people that you're working with, they can only manage this much. And that real humility is so huge in this country at the minute, surrounded by lots of stuff that's still going on. But I just think it's huge, especially coming from a country where, oh God, I'm so glad I'm not there at the minute.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I'm so glad I'm not there at the minute. The leadership of people who are standing up every day saying, this is what's happening and this is what's going on and this is what you need and what do you need. It's been overwhelming for us in an organisation like that. Really has. So
that's so important.
It is so important. And I think I wanted to ask you whether or not you've relaxed. I don't think relaxed is the wrong word, but kind of relaxed into what's going on, or has it fired you up even more to talk about? Because we know from this, the people who work those jobs and who do those tasks will be the people who are hit. You know, the people who are in low paying income jobs, the people who are in crappy housing, they're going to be hit by this so much harder. And we forget, it's like we forget about, yeah, those people are still going to work every day and putting themselves at risk every day. And when we come out of this and I am happy and healthy because I've been in my nice warm house, those people are going to be the people who are in hospital.
Yeah. So two things are true, and really going to sound like a politician here, but I'm both relieved at the direction and the leadership that our country has taken. Of course, none of it was ever going to be perfect and sorted. We did things under urgency. We did things quickly, and it's a changing beast, this, that is happening to us at the moment. I'm relieved with the leadership and the care and the compassion that we have taken our approach with, that everyone's lives matter. I'm also more urgently determined to take this opportunity and continue to fight for our collective health and well-being. Yeah. And that none of us are healthy unless all of us are healthy. None of us are well unless all of us are well. And we're seeing that right now. I think that many of us understand that when we come back out of the emergency and the alert sort of system and situation, what do we want as a country? How can we continue with the collective compassion and care to make sure everyone can live decent lives, to make sure that we are valuing our care workers? Oh my gosh, our in-home care workers, majority of who are women, who have been undervalued, underpaid, undersupported forever. We're seeing a sort of a gender perspective come through in the types of work that is valued and important. We're seeing a low income workers. There's one essential worker behind me, my husband, cruising on past, waving. We're understanding that the way that we have defined who is valuable and who is making a contribution really needs some thought. And I'm pleased that we have got this. I want to make sure that we really do hold on to that concept of everyone making valuable contributions, rather than a narrow definition of success and who is important that we've had for far too long.
God, there's going to be some good reports written after this, eh? I'm like and a report during. Girl. Oh, my God, so much, so much. Yeah. I suppose the last thing I want to talk about is the important thing. What have you been watching or listening to?
Yeah, that is so important, I tell you. I will admit to going to Netflix when I can, when I get the opportunity. And I guess I use it, like many do, as escapism.
Yeah.
So I like a bit of Blacklist. I really like things that are entertaining and quite funny. I've been watching Blacklist. Oh, and Occupied. And ooh. I guess that's not really escapism. It actually is about a green politician, prime minister, who in Norway, who ended oil and gas production in his country and the ensuing political chaos.
Totally relaxing there, man.
Yeah, totally escapism. Not connected at all to my reality. But very entertaining, I think. And so those are the sorts of things I've been relaxing to when I get the chance.
When you get the chance. Okay. Yeah. So the last thing I do is I do a quick fire.
Oh,
very easy. Okay. Are you ready?
Right.
Ready. Orange or apple?
Oh, it's orange. It's orange.
Dog or cat?
Oh, it's dog. It's dog.
Mountain or beach?
It's beach.
Electric bike or standard?
No, electric all the way. I'm sorry. I can't enjoy riding, actual riding. I've got to have an electric.
Me and my partner have this argument about the two. Cold beer or a hot cup of tea?
No, it's hot cup of tea every time.
And which peanut butter do you favour? Who?
It's smooth and it's one moment. I have to quickly.
No,
go to
I
my
knew
cupboard.
You were a peanut butter girl.
Yeah. It's smooth and look at the cupboard full of several jars. Oh, that's a crunchy one because that's my son. That's my son. But that's the Pix.
You see, I always said if you meet somebody who eats smooth peanut butter, they are not to be trusted.
Yeah. See, I totally get that analysis.
My
14-year-old son would say exactly the same thing.
I love it. If you had to listen to one album for the rest of lockdown, what would it be?
Oh, probably Anika Moore. Anything Anika Moore.
She's hopefully going to be on here soon, so I'm very excited. I know.
Yeah.
Well, Marama, thank you so much for the corridor and the Aroha that you show. I am so thankful that you've met with us and us, like there's just me in this room.
There's always an us.
I know, there's always an us. Go and enjoy your Monday, whatever you may do. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. It's been such a pleasure to talk about things.